Brown's house.
Welcome to the Green Room Press. I'm your host, Ruben Arthur. This episode is a feature-length investigation into the Extinction Rebellion protest of 2019 in our voice, our words. We'll be hearing from Fainty Balogun and Jasmine Salter from XR, talking to some friends from Brazil about the Amazon rainforest fire, and dissecting climate activism and how overtly white it looks. Now, technically, we're not journalists or anything, so Waylon thought it would be best to start. This is the best way he knows how.
Location: Canary Wharf, London. What you're hearing is a late-night conversation between me, my sister Fiondra, and her boyfriend Keanu in the Riverside. To give context to the conversation, it was on the 1st of June and the weather was really nice. You know, one of them days that make you excited for the rest of summer. To give even more context, I'm writing this on the 13th of June and it's been raining for the last 5 days. The Met Office even issued an amber warning for floods a couple of days ago. I don't remember how the conversation started, but I knew I needed to record it. And funnily enough, it was on the day that I decided for the concept of this episode. Life comes at you fast in concrete jungles. When she wants to be, my sister's one of the smartest people I know. So I'll let her set the scene for the rest of the episode.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, I understand it completely.
They've got a forest.
They've put, let me tell
that's
you
that's actually
why.
Really fucking sad.
Thank you. They've put a tree over there. They put a tree over there because they've deeped in the world that this concrete jungle is so fucking unhealthy for us. They got to put some type of oxygen source for us to breathe in. Because this shit is all fake.
This is
not what the world is. You're there thinking, okay, 75% of the world is water. But this water was put here. It wasn't here. This whole island is built.
No, babe. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Do you get what I'm saying?
The water was always
here. It's all built.
We built on top of this water.
But we've lost ourselves in this world that we live in. And we think that this is beauty. And it's really not beauty.
It's not beauty, but in the reality, it's beauty.
It is, exactly, because it's something.
But in the real reality, it's not.
It's not beauty. Why do you think this place is so cloudy? It's not because of the weather.
Do you know what, as well? When I'm in Ben's ends and to these ends, when I go,
it's a completely different air.
It's like I'm taking in more air.
And what's so crazy is that because it's like everything you're out here saying, recycle. I've been hearing to recycle for like since I was in primary school. If I was recycling all this time, 10 years, more than 10 years, how the fuck is the world like this then? If you haven't, do you get what I'm saying?
Do you know why? Because we're not the one causing all the pollution that needs recycling. It's our big businesses that are doing that.
And because they're making the most money, they leave it come to be, they don't care.
Exactly, nobody can tell them shit.
That's what I'm saying. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, this whole time, I can't lie to you, I used to be one of them nuts that's like, fuck them animals. I used to be like that, and I deeped, and I thought, like, who the fuck are you? You've been put on this earth to share amongst the plants and the fucking animals.
Mm-hmm.
You need to share that shit equally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing out here birds vomiting up plastic. Are you mad?
Yeah.
I ain't doing that shit.
Mm-hmm. That ain't mad.
I've been recycling it since for 10 years now.
Yeah.
So that
I'll be
ain't
in that
me.
Green bag.
So stop putting that shit on me, because I've been doing my recycling for 10 years now, like you've been telling me to do. Or I'm gonna get
it's very much like they're attacking us for something that we have no control over.
We ain't done all this. We have plastic shit that you're making for your products that's producing pollution. You need to go and tackle that shit.
Yo.
Alright, bro, I've just seen something in London Fields. I'm just buying something for my mum in it. But I've seen one poster for this East London uprising by this group called Extinction Rebellion. And I know you're writing your episode about things of that nature, like end of the world, all them kind of scary things. But I think you should check that out, man. I think it really helped with what you're doing. I just gotta grab this toilet roll, man. But there's so many different brands of toilet roll, bro. Why is it Andrex and then there's a soft tin and the baby tin? I just wonder what the one, man. What's this?
Yesterday, I was supposed to go to an Extinction Rebellion protest. For those of you who don't know, Extinction Rebellion are an international movement that uses non-violent civil disobedience in an attempt to halt the mass extinction and minimise the risk of social collapse caused by climate change. I first heard about them around April of this year, where they basically took over Oxford Street. Like, they had a mass protest for days, I feel like. They had, like, a crazy, massive pink boat that afterwards I found out it was named after a murdered Honduran environmental activist. And they put it, like, in the middle of the intersection of Oxford and Regent Street, and they glued themselves to it. Extinction Rebellion, they have stickers and signs all over the city. And you can't really go on a journey without being reminded of their existence. And they've led to something like 400 different culture and arts organisations, including the Roundhouse, declaring a climate emergency. And I feel like the work they do is amazing, and it's exactly what we need for people to wake up. So you're probably wondering, if I'm saying all of this, why didn't I go to the protest? And the answer is, I didn't go to the protest. Because Extinction Rebellion is the whitest thing in the world. So, that's why I didn't go. But I saw on the programme for the East London Uprising, that they have a decolonisation workshop, which should be interesting. So I'm gonna go tomorrow and see if I was wrong. I don't think I am, but we'll see if I was wrong about them.
Até que a aeronave pare completamente e os avisos luminosos de afivelar o cinto se apaguem. Tenha cuidado ao abrir os compartimentos superiores e lembre-se de levar os pertences trazidos...
Hi, my name is João from São Paulo, Brazil. Wayland asked me if I could talk a little about what is going on here with the Amazon rainforest issue. Well, since the beginning of the year, we are dealing with a new government led by Jair Bolsonaro. Since his early days in politics, Bolsonaro has given lots of statements against the native populations here in Brazil, and throughout his presidential campaign, he didn't have a single proposal to protect our ecosystems. He's against the Paris Agreement and is constantly taking advantage of his power as president with nepotism, cronyism, and constant dissemination of fake news. For the past 20 days, the Amazon rainforest burned. It all started on the fire day when a group of 60 farmers organized a WhatsApp group and some newspaper announcements to put fire in the forests as an act of support to the president, with the pretext of showing Bolsonaro that the only way they can work is through fire. They also knew that it would be almost impossible to find out who's guilty, because the fire would spread too much and no one would take the blame. As minister, Bolsonaro might be prosecuted by the International Court of Justice, but we are still dealing with a lot of retrocess in the environmental politics here. Lots of Brazilians do not understand the importance of the Amazon rainforest, nor the consequences of burning it to the ground. Our president is absolutely inconsequent. He's in the wrong side of history.
I'm Jasmine Salter. I joined Extinction Rebellion back in November.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently, I was working with the Regenerative Culture Group,
mm-hmm.
Who are sort of working under the assumption that if we're going to take down a system that is fundamentally destructive and toxic, we need to sort of be modelling what something different might look like. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. I'm Fainty Balogun. I am an actor by trade and got involved with Extinction Rebellion in sort of the most mad and unexpected way, sort of, and realised that a lot of people that looked like me and that were my family and cousins didn't understand why I would do that or why they were doing it. And then between, like, now and the next rebellion, although, like, I'm still doing a bit of filming here and there, I've been working with XR on, like, outreach stuff and explaining climate change to people that look like me or attempting to.
What exactly was the point that you experienced XR for the first time?
Yeah, okay. So I was in a play last year in central London, and we were rehearsing in Islington, And I realised that all the grass had turned brown. Mm. And I was like, well, that's bizarre. And I remember saying to my director, I remember being like, Mike, yo, like, the grass is brown. Like, that's not okay. And he was like, yeah, sure it is, it's fine. Just get on with it, let's get on with it. Anyway, that kind of stuck in the back of my head, and I was like, well, this is strange. And a few years previously, I'd sort of read It's Changed Everything by Naomi Klein, so I was aware of stuff that was going on, and I did a play, it was about climate change, and I did that thing that you did where you, like, you're faced with, a big fact and a truth, and then you, like, get on with your day. Because, I gotta eat, and I gotta work, I gotta make money, I gotta live. So anyway, that was a couple of years ago, put that back, and then got to the grass being brown, and it kind of, like, mould, and then it was, like, hot, it was hot. Mm. I remember being backstage, and it was, like, my first, like, ever, like, lead in a big West End show, and I'm backstage preparing, and I'm, like, I'm thinking, like, yo, like, this is hot. Mm. This is, like, I'm thinking about my character, but, like, this is weird, this is bizarre, why... Mm. Anyway, so that kind of, again, mulling over, and I started having, like, anxiety dreams about, like, why is it so hot? Why is nobody doing anything? Why is everybody else in my world, in this, like, theatrical world, like, fine? It's like, just, like, chilling. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? Mm-hmm. I feel utterly, utterly powerless. And then, again, memory goes back to Extinction Rebellion. Like, okay, they've got a talk going on in the town that I was doing a play in Bath. And I went and I sat down, and there was no one in the room that looked like me, mm-hmm. to be quite frank. But it was the first time I had been in a room with more than 50 people who understood what I was feeling, mm-hmm. who were freaking out. And, like, in a really sort of almost psychopathically practical way.
Yeah.
Of, like, look, this is the issue, society's crumbling, this is going and going. I never really heard it like that. I've never been, someone be like, well, that's a fact, which is a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Food sources are going down, things are getting more expensive, the people that can't afford it the most are the ones that are going to be able to afford it the least. Like, again, and I was like, oh, okay, these people get it. This is mad. And that's because people haven't understood the point that we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how bad things really are. Where the thing I felt in that room in Bath, the first time I talked to XR people, was the thing that was lacking in my mum.
Mm.
The realisation or an actual, like, understanding of a truth.
Yeah.
So then I had to ask myself, why? Why has that happened? Why is it that my mum and my aunties and my cousins have this dissonance? And I realised that it goes way, way deeper. It's like, I was talking to Jasmine about this today, and it's like, if you are unfairly treated in a society, let's say you're from Nigeria, you come over to this country, you have children, you're a single mum, society is going to treat you unfairly.
Yeah.
It has. And I understand that more now than I did at that point. If you are treated unfairly in society, you're not granted personhood. So if you're not granted personhood, how can you be granted citizenship? Like, actual realisation of your own power as a citizen.
Mm.
And if you don't realise that, then how can you enact change?
Mm.
There's this thing, this movement away from actually owning what you can do, because society tells you differently. And I, as a privileged sort of, like, English black man who's done fairly well for himself in his career... Because of his mum working three jobs and, like, making this stuff happen, and me not needing to fight as hard as my cousins have had to fight.
Yeah.
I'm all like, well, everything's the same, you know? I'm just a person. And it's way deeper than that. It's way deeper.
Mm.
Yeah.
Shit.
Crazy. Jasmine?
Hard to follow up, but no pressure.
How did you go from Scotland to London exile?
I unfortunately don't have quite as long a beautiful and amazing story. But,
that's
all
right.
Jeez, guys. Yeah, well, basically, I mean, I was studying architecture. And I suppose actually it does start sort of similarly. Mm. Sitting in a world, I started trying to, I started studying it because I was like, I experienced this thing, permaculture, building eco-houses, and I was like, oh my God, guys, if we just, doesn't everyone know? If we build eco-houses, they cost like two grand, you can make them out of straw bales. If everyone knew this, if everyone could do this, architecture, then like the world's gonna be safe, the world's gonna be fine. So I went to go and study architecture and really quickly realized that that was not the place to try and enact any form of change at all. I managed to get through like my bachelor's and then was looking down the barrel of another 5 years. Let's bear in mind that the world's ending. Down the barrel of another 5 years before getting anywhere near making any form of change.
Yeah.
And actually went to this conference that was amazing. It was like called Architecture and Feminisms, and the one thing that like everyone there was these incredible women like from like across the world came to this conference, and the main thing that they were talking about and the main thing they were saying to me as someone who's like much younger and earlier on in their profession was, it's so good to see you here, quit and do something that'll actually make a difference. So I left and then saw this video from Gail doing the talk, Gail Bradbrook, talking about grief. And I suppose in that moment where you're finally in another group of people who are also seeing the world that you're seeing and not ignoring it, changed everything. And I joined in November, again, really hesitantly. I've got another friend as well who's now, who also is full-time in the movement, who we met on that day and had this really, like, hilarious conversation where, like, neither of us had done activism before, we'd never been, like, particularly involved, where we were sort of, like, both really uncomfortable with being there. And this, like, day-long NVDA, non-violent direct action training. And so we had this kind of like, oh no, well we'll stay tomorrow. Maybe I'll see you around. I don't know if this is for me though. I don't know. And then both of us, after doing like a couple of days, have become full time and never left.
Mm.
I finally have found something that for me, at least calms that ever growing sense of existential doom, because I know for the bits of climate change that this might be able to hold back, the bits of like catastrophe that we might be able to avert, and the bits that we won't, I've now got a group of people that I know and that are experiencing it and seeing it and doing absolutely everything that they can.
Mm.
And that's been huge.
Okay. What is it like? What is the day to day of a full time climate activist, I guess?
Exceptionally boring.
There's no like co-op, like undercover missions.
I wish. No, I spend all my days on spreadsheets. I'm so sorry. The other side of activism is like deeply unsexy. But I did also get arrested. Woo!
Where did you get arrested? What's your arrest story?
My arrest story was that I was in Oxford Circus.
Okay.
Was one of the more intense.
That's the first time I heard about you guys.
Okay, cool.
What led up to the arrest and what happened afterwards?
It's a good thing that this is going out post October because my trial isn't until October 14th. So I wouldn't be able to speak about it. just so you know, make sure this doesn't go out.
Exclusive, you heard it first.
Can't tell the story otherwise. I was doing well-being, so. Part of what we're doing is that, like, making sure that people have support networks, that we've got, like, every person that's arrested is met from the police station. We have, like, loads of, like, trying to get legal aid. People will accompany you to court and all that. So I was on the ground doing well-being, where you support people as they kind of go to get arrested, look out for vulnerable people in the crowd. I seeing someone like a kind of potentially vulnerable adult who was there, who were like, okay, you know, sometimes you just like you see people that have wandered through and you're like, I mean, you know, or vulnerable, that's not really the right way to put it, but like just someone that clearly doesn't want to be there and doesn't know that they don't want to be there, and so you're gonna go up and be like, by the way, this is like a beautiful festival environment and we're doing this to kind of model the way in which like people can be together, but actually by being in this space it is a bit dangerous. I'm sort of trying to make sure that everyone who's walking through knows that. So I've seen someone who was like, do you want to be here? So I'd gone down to sit on the ground and they picked me up and away I went.
What was the charge?
What
is the charge?
Breach of section 14.
What's Section 14?
Section 14 is a public order act that's generally used in riots. Mm-hmm. Used for riots, it's basically like if there's a significant amount of disruption or destruction to a local community, then they place a blanket order so that anyone who is within a certain group in that certain area can be arrested for a breach of the Public Order Act.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound totalitarian at all.
Yeah. So that's what they're getting us all with.
When I went to the East London uprising, it was cool. There was speeches that I liked. The main reason I went was to, like, quell my concerns about the outward face of XR, which seems so white.
Oh, yeah.
What?
So white.
Really? you're joking. From where?
Are you telling me the truth?
I cannot see what you're saying. Ah! I will have to think about it.
Yeah. So I went and I feel like there were two black people there.
Yeah.
I went particularly for the decolonization workshop because mm-hmm. I wanted to see what XR's point of view was. And it wasn't really a workshop. It was all of us sitting down and it was talk to the person next to you about what you think decolonization is. And at that specific time, they programmed the loudest and the worst drumming session.
No.
Oh,
they. No.
Yeah.
No. What see, type of drumming?
Well, see, now that you are.
No.
Drums are so distracting.
Yeah.
And also, I
want to
dance enough, so it's just like so awesome.
I mean, even that's how much of like a lack of really understanding or care that is to program the only decolonization workshop at the same time
during
that they got
the loudest.
Yeah. I think even that in itself is something.
So that happened. And if I was a weak-willed person, that would have dissuaded me.
Yeah.
But I want XR. I want you guys. Mm. I'm giving you guys like my hope. Because I feel nobody else is doing shit. Mm. But I just, you guys can do better, man.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess my question is to you, what has been your experience of being a black man in XR?
Honestly?
Mm-hmm.
Strange. Going into the first office, there were some moments that were a bit like, oh. Mm-mm. So, for instance, where... oh, come on, look, listen, XR's growing, innit? But it's having some growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
Like, moments, just little moments where you're like, you know, someone will shake someone else's hand and then they'll change it. So they're like...
yeah, I'll dab you up.
Hello, brother. And you're like, yo.
Yeah. I can shake.
I know how to do it. but, I mean, it's sweet, really, because, you know, trying to ever end. But, like, there have been moments of, like, in someone has probably just acted in a way that illustrates their privilege
mm-hmm.
and doesn't take into account the other person
mm-hmm.
in the room. Whereas if I was in a room of people I knew and surround myself with now, that just wouldn't have ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that is like a few people within XR. And XR is such like a big,
mm-hmm.
a big thing because, you know, it's decentralized, which means there's no real leader, you know. So there are lots of pockets of people. Like, I'm meeting people now that I didn't know at the beginning of the year who are just the most litty people. Mm-hmm. They're like beautiful souled people from different backgrounds, just being like, yo, like, that's a bit whack, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's oh, thank God.
Like, you can breathe.
I can breathe. And talk and laugh and be funny. Yeah, so I guess in answer to your question, strange. Mm-hmm. And I felt a responsibility to change that or, you know, it's not the responsibility of like, if I said to someone, hey, come and join XR, mm-hmm. we don't got that many black people, come help me. Mm-hmm. It's not that person's job to make them feel secure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not the point. If I'm in this position where I've come into it and been open, or you know, I'm in a position of privilege and I'm very aware that I see the world that I do and I see that. So it's now my job mm-hmm. or like a responsibility to try and encourage a space where people can just feel like people, mm-hmm. Which I'm attempting to do at the moment through mm-hmm. talks and within XR, within the people already mm-hmm. joining in and workshops and things like that. At the same time as trying to like have a career.
Of course. Yeah. So how do you, what do you think it would be the best way for XR to kind of change their outward face and open itself up to be more welcoming, I guess, to people of colour?
I think first it's got to start from the inside. Mm-hmm. I think the most basic of things of like, this is a subconscious bias. Mm-hmm. You don't know that you're saying this in the conversation, you don't know that you're aiming to do this, but for a person of colour, that's not okay, and that's something we'd never think about. Mm-hmm. You're just drawn to this decision. That's where it's going to start. Because then we can move away from tokenism mm-hmm. and actually be inclusion. Instead of like bringing black people to just like be like,
we've got black people.
We've got black people.
Yeah. Like, be like, I was going to ask you that.
Well, I had a meeting about this week because mm-hmm. myself and shouts to Hannah were asked to do something and we were a bit like, I'm not qualified to do that. And like how, like, and then we were like, well, basically people need to know there is a difference and you have to work from that difference, especially if you're in this standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to be your token, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And but also I need you to understand why, instead of just being kind of like angry and it's like, oh, just I shouldn't have to explain this to you.
Who's going
to
do it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's one big thing that I think has to happen. Talks in within XR, mm-hmm. and then outwardly making sure again when their actions happening that people are informed. Mm-hmm. People have got to make an I can't tell people what to do, but I can give you all the information, and then I can do as a person within it, provide spaces in which you can feel safe.
Mm-hmm. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, XR's anniversary is coming up.
Oh yeah.
Are there any plans for the XR anniversary?
So the anniversary of the Declaration of Rebellion is actually the 30th of October, which is going to be a busy time for us all. in many ways.
Oh, God.
So I don't know if anything's happening on that day necessarily, but there is something coming up in October, just before it. So from October the 7th for 2 weeks, we've got another rebellion on the streets.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where?
Everywhere.
all the
streets, everywhere. I mean, well, this one's international again, so this is, it's going to be happening like around the world. There's one happening in Paris, one happening in Berlin, one happening in...
All over.
And ours will be happening in London, mm-hmm. the UK one again. Check out the centre.
Oxford
Circus? Think of a street. It's that one.
Okay, so basically what's happening is Extinction Rebellion are protesting outside my office. They've shut down the whole thing. I work at BBC New Broadcasting House. They've shut down the whole thing protesting. There's probably like 300-400 people here. Yeah, the building's on lockdown. All of the regular entrances are closed. Have to go through this crazy back entrance. It's amazing. I'm not gonna lie. I'm loving it. And everybody I've spoken to from work is agreeing. So we support them.
Transmission Roundhouse.